Well, our friend Stephen Quayle back with us in his work in Little Creatures. He looks at legends and fairy tales surrounding little creatures and reveals how these tales provide clues, secrets that can be assembled like a jigsaw puzzle and give you an amazing picture of our past, of these supernatural creatures. Up next, Stephen Quayle with me on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know him, Stephen Quayle, author of the primary for Understanding Bioterrorism called Breathe No Evil. And after that, of course, things went through the roof. Stephen continues to shout from those rooftops, telling us about the lack of civil defense and to be prepared. He's written several other books, too, including Genesis 6, Giants. We're talking about little creatures. The gates of hell are opening. Stephen, welcome back.
Hi, George. Good morning to everyone listening out there in the Coast family. And boy, we've got some stuff to cover tonight.
This is amazing. I was doing some research into your work. Tell me, you're the guy who came from giants, now little creatures. Tell me about this.
Well, the more I got into giants, and we'll talk about that a little later on in the show, the fascination with the little people or the hidden people or the wee folk, going by as many as 400 different names throughout the world, it was astonishing to me that the little creatures were always found at least in the same general vicinity of history and mythology. So I decided that, they're popping up too many places in history. We had to deal with them. Now, it's interesting because I sent to Lisa Lyons, your producer, the story, and I think she sent it to you, too, that you saw the story about in Iceland, respect the elves or else.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is something in The Guardian that happened, the newspaper, a couple days ago, maybe a week ago. But it says, if you want to lay a road, build a house, or construct a dam in Iceland, there's one influential group you have to clear with first, the elves. Now, these people are dead serious. But what's interesting, George, is the mythology and the legends from around the world. There is a phenomenon that obviously, as I write about aliens and fallen angels, the sexual corruption of the human race, when we're dealing with the fairy tales of old, whether they're the Grimm's fairy tales, 211 of them by 1857, the fascinating thing is they have so many parallels to alien abduction, especially of women, of children, of being raped, of having children switched, if you will, in the cribs or in the nurseries. The modern-day phenomenon of movie stars talking about having sex with demons, incubus in the form of a male entity, succubus in the form of a female entity. So it was my understanding and undertaking to try and put this stuff together in history, and out of that came the book, Little Creatures, The Gates of Hell Are Opening, and my mind was blown. By the way, this is not for children, okay?
No, not at all.
I want to make that clear. This is not for children, because when you look at this, it's not the Disney-like characters. Those are usually, I would say, the putting the best foot forward on some of the most gruesome stories in history. So from the Hawaiian Islands, when you've got the Menhuni, Naripan in Thailand, Pedro the Mountain Mummy in Wyoming, the Ant People and the Hopi Legends, one can't get away from that, even to the jinn in the Middle East, and the Alduais, the terror that comes by night, the female succubus, that's where the term man-eater came from. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our words people don't understand are directly related to these creatures. It's my contention now that truly the gates of hell are opening, have opened, and the supernatural phenomenon that people are experiencing is only getting worse.
And the people who are experiencing this, it scares the living daylights out of them, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's fascinating because this is not something that's just unique to the United States. It's not unique to those who watch science fiction movies. When the Psalm 91 says a terror that comes by night, this is literally people are being terrorized. And one of the things that is interesting is how many people are reporting to me, again, from all over the world, a night paralysis, literally being scared to the point of totally paralyzed. And so there are things happening. Now, again, the gates of hell is an interesting concept. A gate either holds something back or allows something through. And as we're dealing with CERN now and stargates, by the way, another word for stargate, ancient Hebrews, as the word star and messenger or angel were the same things. They were interchangeable. So the entities that are being associated with CERN, it's fascinating. There was a story, 2 days ago, that the scientists have proposed that if the aliens show up, they're going to be giants. Did you see that one?
Yes, I sure did.
So, you know, I think it was Barry Kamish who wrote about giants in the Holy Land a number of years ago, maybe a decade ago, but most people don't know this. You can go on a search engine and look it up. But when the saucers were landing in, or the ships were landing in Israel, some of these things were 9 feet tall. So we go from tall to small. Now, here's what's interesting. They who control the past determine the future. And as I got into this more and more, and absolutely had I had some people in the field that went out to Sardinia in search of giants, but again, the legends of the little people showed up. What was fascinating, George, is it was always someone from a organized, either the Roman Catholic Church or what they referred to over there, same as we do here, spooks, that was always there under any finds of giants, any finds of little people. And my team that actually went over there, they were basically tracked in real time. It was almost like they said a cheap spy novel, the guy sitting in the corner in Sardinia. And for the record, Sardinians have a great tie-in with the legend of Atlantis. So we're talking tonight about the supernatural coming into our present reality and people responding. And it's my contention, as you've had me on your show for the years, almost going on a decade, is that we're seeing more and more of the things that have been hidden brought to light. And it's not a good thing, because again, when I say it's not a good thing, is that what you have in common with whether you're dealing with the little creatures or the tricksters or the goblins or the brownie sprites, Jinn or whatever, you're dealing with some very malevolent entities. And I want to give someone a quote. This was fascinating because I found this. It's about a 200-year-old quote, and this is quoting a fairy. Now, people have got to understand that some of the most famous authors in history believed in them. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sir Walter Scott, and Robert Louis Stevenson maybe made the statement that it was a brownie, a hidden folk, a wee folk, that dictated to him the plot to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. 99% of the people probably never would have believed that. But here's the statement. God be between me and every fairy, every ill wish and every druidry. Today is Thursday on sea and land. Not the seed of Adam are we, nor is Adam our father, but of the seed of the proud angel driven forth from heaven. So you've got this parallel dimension. You've got the claim that these little entities, and again, they're worldwide, whether we're in Australia, whether we're in the Middle East, whether we're in the frozen north, the deep Patagonian peninsula, if you will, of South America, the common denominator is this, is that they were always found in respect to their harassing of mankind, their sexual exploitation of mankind, and then the things that we have come to know as nightmares, dreams, filthy dreams. And it's fascinating because even in the scripture, people don't understand that when the Apostle Paul in the Bible, New Testament, is talking about seducing spirits, he's not talking about a metaphor for intellectual, let's say this, thought captivation. He was talking about literal entities. So, you know, it's fascinating to me that one thing led to another. And so now we're talking tonight on Coast about little creatures, and the amount of information out there is staggering.
How little are they, Stephen?
Well, I mean, when you talk about the Hopis and the ant people, they're talking about people the size of ants. I think a good portrayal that people might relate to is in Spielberg, one of the Men in Black movies. You remember all the little creatures that were in the guy's head?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fascinating because obviously Steven Spielberg, I'm told from people who have been interviewed by him, that, and again, I don't know him nor have I talked to him, but he's very up on alien abductions. He's very up on a lot of the myths and legends. But the little people, when you're dealing with Pedro the Mountain Mummy, you're dealing with six-inch Nari Pond to Pedro the Mountain Mummy. Boy, that's a hard one for me to say right now. Mountain Mummy at 12 inches. And we're talking now about fascinating events. And in Little Creatures, one nice thing about this, I think I've got about 165 illustrations. And even to the Peruvian, if you will, some of these things are absolutely, they imagine a 12-inch or even a 3-inch alien. You and I did a show, what, 7 or 8 years ago on the little alien found in the Atacama Desert.
Yes,
remember that?
I remember. Great show.
Yeah, that was a great show. And fascinatingly enough, as you and I are on the air tonight, and again, for the record, it's April 8th, the Atacama Desert just had the biggest rainstorm, I believe, in their history. And it's my contention that a lot of stuff after the flood, I mean, it's a raging, it looks like a tsunami inland, and people want to see it. I posted it on my website, stevequayle.com. But if you remember, George, that alien, that little alien was less than 6 inches, actually,
right.
Maybe 4 inches. So when we broke that story, and you and I did break that story, it's now recirculating, you know, whatever, 10 years later. But it's fascinating because they tried to disprove it. They took x-rays, they took DNA samples, and just like everything else, it's not related to the human genome. And no offense, but that's a big duh. The thing is that we're now seeing the revelations of the Yeti woman. You probably saw that the other day.
Mm-hmm.
We were told for so many years that Neanderthal was one of our ancestors, only to find out that isn't the case at all. So when we're talking about little creatures, we're talking about interesting anomalies that they all seem to possess. Number one, they can appear and disappear as almost as going through, if you will, a dimensional gate. They come out of rocks, and that's a fascinating subject because, again, in all of the research that I've been doing these years, decades now, the point being is that they can change their DNA and their form to come in and out. So in essence, they're able to go through different, if you will, dimensions of matter. So we're seeing now, and people are talking about this all over the world, we're just getting a grasp on so many of the ancient themes. And by the way, all of our ancestors weren't a bunch of cave-dwelling Neanderthals that went around beating their women on heads with clubs. I think that's the most demeaning stereotype because, again, I maintain, as you know, that the fallen angels and fallen angels, which I'd like to clear up some words tonight, the Nephilim are fallen angels, and the fallen angels in the Book of Giants, which are the Dead Sea Scrolls, some of the Qumran scrolls, talk about literally the fallen angels. Obviously, Zachariah Sitchin called them the Anunnaki. People referred to them as aliens, but the fallen angels came and not only polluted the human genome, but they polluted the animal genome too. In essence, they corrupted everything genetically. Fallen angels can transform themselves. They can become shapeshifters. And the Native American legends, which you and I have talked about, we did a show on my book, True Legends, are fascinating. So what's happened, George, is all these things are coming full circle now. And I think this is like the missing puzzle piece of the little creatures. And they're, if you will, almost the attendant-like position in history that they relate to giants over.
Are any of these creatures from planet Earth originally? It sounds like they're either all from an extraterrestrial race, other dimensions, but were any of them naturally born here?
From what I can understand, no. And I would say extra-dimensional more than extraterrestrial.
Okay.
And again, because the way that, if you notice, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick, some of the nursery rhymes we've known, Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your long hair, Snow White. And by the way, I would say this, that, again, these are not children's stories. And the Grimm's fairy tales, they were originally put out for children, but obviously the parents said, look, this is not for kids to be
No.
reading
How
back in the
about Ring Around the Rosie? You know, all the kids start playing that, and that's about the Black Plague, wasn't it? When they all
Yes, sir, it
died?
was. And the Pied Piper, you know, I mean, we're talking about some very dark, dark issues. And, you know, here's the thing. We're now seeing, if you will, a prevalence throughout the world of preternatural, meaning above natural or supernatural events. There's more spirals opening up. And by the way, when people see spirals in Native American legends and in Aboriginal legends, whenever you would see a spiral on a petroglyph or a stone carving or rock carving, that was always indicative of a stargate. We're seeing now the stories coming out. As I was told years ago by a general in special operations that tracks down the stuff that goes bump in the night, and I'm sure he'll be listening to the show, he said, Steve, it's never what's above ground. It's what's underneath the ground. In other words, it's not
right.
What's on the Giza Plateau. It's underneath the Giza Plateau. And we're just seeing now that some of the hugest pyramids in the world are in Bosnia. They're in Romania. And there are so many fascinating stories of the little people associated. So what I'm saying tonight simply is this, is that what most people have never seen before, and I haven't, and no one has done it. I mean, there are people who have written stories of books on fairy tales, is typing it as how it relates to the alien deception and how it plays into the giant issue. And so in talking about giants, George, after all these years of writing about giants, investigating giants, right now we've got an expedition going on for giants, not dead bones, but living ones. And that's another story, and we'll break that story with your permission on Coast when the guys get back.
Of course.
But the
yeah.
point is that already, because of the interest in, again, I want to make this clear, not bones, the real entities, you know, I will just say this, certain spy agencies are working overtime to watch everything that's going on in other parts of the world right now. In an expedition or two that's going on. That's all I can say. I'm not trying to be, you know, melodramatic. I'm just saying that people really do monitor this stuff. Our Sardinia expedition, Tim Alberino and a guy named Darren and some other people went on that. Basically, they were met by very, very cautious individuals who are 50 and 60, but remember seeing the helicopters coming in and taking giant skeletons out of Sardinia that were 18 feet tall. And the fascinating that in some of those areas right now, where they literally call a certain area the Tomb of the Giant, most people don't realize that on Sardinia is one of the largest pyramids in the world. Some of the canals that were in Sardinia match, if you will, the designation of Plato and Atlantis. I don't believe that Sardinia was Atlantis, but I believe that Atlanteans, after Atlantis was destroyed, settled in Sardinia. And what's fascinating to me is you've got the same thing in Sardinia as you have in Antarctica, as you have in the Arctic, as you have in South America, as you have in Australia. Whenever this stuff turns up, if you will, it's not men in black that show up. It's sometimes men who want to make sure that the world never sees the light of that. One of my guys just encountered someone in another country who said, you must realize this. You must realize, these are his words, one of the most famous archaeologists in the world, that this is the most controlled subject in the world, and they will do anything to keep it quiet. The man who said that was terrified. And so to make a long story short, the team had to meet with him. So how does this relate to the little people? Well, it's the same story, George, because, again, wherever you have the history, the mythology, or the oral tradition of the little people, you always have, if you will, let's just call them spooks. You have people that really don't want the truth to be known. See, when you can dismiss something as just myth, fable, whatever, you can basically put it into the realm of science fiction. Oh, that's not true. That couldn't be true. That's just science fiction. Well, as you and I have talked, how much science fiction has now turned out to be fact?
Hold on, Stephen, as we come back for more, as we talk about little creatures right here on Coast to Coast AM. And I invite you all to watch our television program, Beyond Belief. If you would, you can go to this website and participate and watch it for a while at the www.beyondbelief.com. It is that simple. We're going to come back in a moment with Stephen Quayle as we talk more about his latest research work, Little Creatures, next. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Stephen Quayle with us. Stephen, these little creatures, what do they want?
It seems like, George, because of the nature of all of them in general, it seems like they derive some form of sustenance from the human sexual experience, from human body fluids, i.e. the whole alien abduction thing. And by the way, people who are recounting these, a lot of them are non-religious. This has nothing to do with even an inherent belief system. There are people that live in parts of the world that don't even have mythologies concerning this that are experiencing it. One of them is a researcher named Michael Mott, M-O-T-T. And he said, I've personally had dreams with disturbing content as a result of spontaneous awareness during sleep paralysis. He said, I've experienced this on countless occasions. One occasion I felt like I woke up in bed lying on my side and opened my eyes. I felt and saw a thin, red, leathery, bat-like wings draped over me, such as the posture of a vampire from a Hollywood movie. So what they seem to want is the same thing. Now, I want to make I didn't get to finish my thought, and I apologize, but I will finish it. Nephilim in the Old Testament, fallen angels, when they had sex with earth women, they produced the giants. 33 times in the Old Testament, the word is Rephaim. The word Nephilim, which everybody calls a giant now Nephilim, it's not really a correct term. They call demons Nephilim. That's not correct either. But when the fallen angel had sexual relationship with an earth woman and produced a giant, obviously, that giant was not just a natural entity. It had a supernatural element to it. That's how come there are people that want to claim, well, because of the Earth's gravity in those days, nothing could be that size. That just simply is not true, because even the modern systems of transportation that we use in all of our top secret spacecraft and aircraft uses electrogravitics. The ancients knew how to overcome gravity with harmonics, in essence, harmonic levitation. So the Nephilim are the fallen angels. The Rephaim are the giants. When the giants died, whether it's Goliath or Polyphemus, the 400-foot Cyclops, we'll get to that maybe in this later on the show. The point is that spirit, that hybrid spirit, half human, half fallen angel, became demons. Demons seek to possess. They seek to inhabit. They seek to reintroduce themselves into the human genome. And it all centers around sex, interestingly enough. You know, it's amazing that whether you're dealing with aliens, and you and I joked on the air before, George, you know, for a good time, stop off at planet Earth. I think they made a really bad science fiction movie once called Earth Women Are Easy. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, but now somebody says, well, why would you bring that up? Simply because there is an underlying tone in the, if you will, in Hollywood, to bring into a dimension, just as CERN, and we'll get to that in a minute, but the fallen angels are the Nephilim. The giants are the Rephaim. Now, why is this important to establish? Because people use the wrong terms. They assume that demons, and in the Greek, daimonissimi, it means disembodied. If something's disembodied, it had to be embodied. Jesus taught when an unclean spirit, a demon, goes out, it seeks to return to the place or the person that it got cast out of. So why is this critical now? Because what's fascinating, in the last 2 weeks, people have brought up the fact, scientists, that they could reconstitute Hitler. Did you see that story?
Mm-hmm, sure did. Why would they want to do that?
Well, here's the deal. There is a hierarchy in evil. There is a very present pecking order in evil. And if I told you that, and I've been told by people, I couldn't know this, so I don't know this firsthand, but when you got guys that have 4 stars, and they're telling you that there's a group of individuals out there looking for the DNA of all the most evil, malevolent people in history, than that these men destroyed marvelously. Very few women, by the way, but I mean, whether you're looking for the DNA of Genghis Khan, whether you're looking for the DNA of, oh, good night, any of the famous butchers in history.
Mm-hmm. Attila the Hun.
Attila the Hun, thank you. That's the one I was struggling with. I am told that they possessed those gene banks. And as people, I've maintained on your show, and we've talked about it, cloning, you know, cloning human beings. I said, what happens if the people that you think are your elected politicians, that some of them have been actually displaced or replaced or cloned? You know, people used to laugh and, you know, they'd make fun and I'd read some of the comments. But now, I mean, it's given that they're going to clone individuals, they're going to have triple parent babies. So when you talk about having, let's just say this, you know, the most malevolent beings in the world, recorded history, when you're talking about having their DNA and being able to reconstitute them, then the demons that inhabited those people that caused them to do all those things will come back into their bodies. So basically, you can call it reanimation. So in the world of Hell's hierarchy, they want these individuals walking back on the earth. It's kind of like in Argentina, where in some areas in Argentina, I forget the town, you know, they made a movie about it called The Boys of Brazil, but everybody, it has the highest prevalence of twins because supposedly Dr. Mengele of Nazi fame mm-hmm. and his scientists went there and actually were producing, if you will, genetic alterations, and that's almost, what, 70 years ago now.
Yeah. He never stopped, did he?
He never stopped. And then, you know, it was fascinating. I was told by a general, and again, I could not know this, that the fight was to get Gilgamesh, G-I-L-G-A-M-E-S's DNA from the sarcophagus that was in Iraq. And prior to the invasion, he basically told me this. He said, Steve, most of the special operations, beyond the dealing with foreign governments and the introduction of advanced teams, is trying to locate all of the hidden and the alien, when I say alien, hidden or alien DNA, or the entities themselves, to extract both the DNA and also the technology. Now, again, most people would be flabbergasted to know this, but at one of NASA's and the National Space Administration, NASA, National Aeronautic and Space Administration, the deal is that they have the Hindu scientists. And by the way, the Indian scientists are some of the brightest men in the world, and they were presenting Sanskrit texts on Vimanas. Did you see that story?
That was a great story. That's the Vimana story has always fascinated.
Right. So here you have the leading astrophysicists, you have the leading, if you will, designers of both known and unknown spacecraft, and you've got the Hindus presenting the propulsion systems, the design parameters, the control mechanisms of Vimanas, and they made it kind of, how would you say, they mocked them. But these guys are going back 4,000 and 6,000 years. So how could anybody get that kind of, if you will, blueprints for those unless they existed? So I thought that was kind of fascinating. So you know what's fascinating, George? We're on the show tonight, and so many times we've been on the air together, and when we talk about a subject,
something's
it shows
happened.
Up in the press.
Yeah, or something's happened.
Yes.
I remember when there was troop movements one night. We were on for 4 hours. Remember that one, Stephen?
Yes, sir, I do.
Oh, my gosh. Leprechauns. What's your take on leprechauns?
It's fascinating because the British Isles, whether you're dealing with London, Scotland, Britain, Scotland, or Ireland, the British Isles are always filled with the leprechauns. And again, they call them the wee people. It doesn't matter what name. It's fascinating because, as you know, many of the British Isles, they had separate states or separate areas. So they're called by different names, you know, and obviously the pot of gold. The history of leprechauns is that obviously if you could catch one or you could entrap one, he would have to give you gold to let him go. And what's fascinating, whether they're leprechauns, brownies, elves, sprites, they all wore their little caps. And it was fascinating that legend would declare that without their caps, they could not achieve invisibility. Isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating.
So whether you're dealing with Smurfs in their little hats or leprechauns, I mean, I found that fascinating. This is one of those things that you set out to investigate, and you see how much cartoons have integrated this, and i.e. comic books and graphic novels now, and it's like there has been a central theme running through history, good versus evil, and it always revolves. And by the way, even the leprechaun stories can get pretty raunchy, okay? And so the point being is that in different parts of the British Isles, different parts of the world, basically the same name for the, or excuse me, different names for the same individuals.
Let me ask you about this too, with the little creatures and babies. I have always heard stories, Stephen, that they want to capture the little child's soul or something like that. Have you come across any of that?
Sure. I detail that in immense detail in the book. I go in and describe it, you know, and that was the fear of people growing up for 2,000 years, that if they had a baby, they would literally stand guard over it because the leprechauns or the elves or the sprites or whomever, they call them the she, spelled S-I-D-H-E, pronounced S-H-E-E, the she would come in and change their babies. In other words, they could not reproduce a full functioning child, in other words, the leprechauns. So they would basically steal the human baby produced by two humans, and then they would exchange it, or that's why they came up with the word changeling, okay? You've heard that word before,
yeah.
C-H-A-N-G-E-L-I-N-G. So, and I'm spelling it because some of these words, they sound like one thing and are spelled another way. So the fascinating thing is that it's kind of very similar to the alien abduction of little children also. And it's fascinating to me, too, that as you go into this, I got to tell you, George, when I did the research for little creatures, it started to blow my mind. That's what originally happened in Genesis 6 Giants, which, by the way, I've updated, and maybe we can talk about that, because one of the things that turned up that it seems like as more research is done and as more field investigation is done, one thing leads to another. And then what happens is that you get keys. I'm talking about, if you will, time lock keys on specific information that's being hidden. And now it's all coming to the forefront. The U.S. military put out actually funded a study on all the Native American legends. And I've referred to it on your show before, and I quote from it in my book, True Legends. But they don't dismiss it. And again, in the Native American legends, the parallel to the British Isles of the changelings, of somebody coming in and taking an inferior genetic offspring and substituting it for a real one. And that's why, a real human child. So that's why there's so many, all these stories, fairy tales, always involve children for that reason.
They're dangerous, aren't they?
They're dangerous. I don't find any fun-loving fairies, okay? They're all very malevolent. They're tricksters. So many of the words we use, the will-o'-wisps, you know, how many times did have people, you know, there was a lot of terminology in early America that have kind of passed away, but the will-o'-wisps would be lights, and we're seeing orbs, and those lights would lead people into the swamps, and they were always trying to destroy small children. And fascinating enough, the jack-o'-lantern that people associate with Halloween was way beyond Halloween, the association. I mean, it was always the, if you will, it was in swamps or bogs or marshes. And their goal, totally, I'm saying it three times, was to destroy human beings by seduction. And you can't get away from that. So now we've got, in the little creatures, we've got the whole list of little creatures. I mean, brownies. Wasn't there a junior version of Girl Scouts called brownies?
Oh, yeah, sure. My little girls were in that. We all, as parents, we put all our kids in things like that.
Right. And so the point being is that there's so much, how do I say this? There's so much folklore that is related to the issues. Again, look, an advanced civilization from billions of light years, or as Carl Sagan would say, billions and billions of light years away, it's fascinating to me that they have such an affinity, if you will, for human sexuality. That's what you can't get away from. Incubus and succubus. The incubus is absolutely filling the pages of history. Now, when you've got guys like Napoleon, you know, a general, and he's believing in the little people. I've already said to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, obviously Sir Walter Scott. When you've got these people, these were the people of their time that were great thinkers, you know, William Griffiths. So when you've got these gentlemen, this caliber, these guys aren't dismissing it. By the way, in my book, Little Creatures, basically they're showing up now. And I believe the reason why they're coming back into our dimension full and with full fury is because during, if you remember, the Age of the Enlightenment, science took the place of everything else they thought, and everything turned to an ism, communism, naturalism, socialism, Nazism. But what's fascinating as the Nazis, I don't know if you've had anybody on your show talk about the Third Reich and the occult.
Oh, yeah, we've had the Jerry Corsi and some people.
Yeah,
like that.
And the thing is that when you look at the Annenerbe, you and I have talked about that, the fascination with the Nazis wanting the supernatural power and to make contact with these people, even to the point of going to the Himalayas and, you know, drilling human skulls, looking for the third eye, et cetera, et cetera. The you can't get away from even those reports of looking for the little people, because what the little people possessed was, number one, the power of invisibility. Number two, the ability to move from point to point on the globe seemingly instantaneously. I mean, with great, there are reports that they themselves, the little people, said they can travel instantaneously to different points on the planet.
Can they vanish and then appear?
They vanish and appear.
Huh.
And the invisibility was always linked to their little hats, and I don't know why that is, okay? But the point, the idea was to capture these little guys, you know, you had to grab their hats.
Huh. Get the hat, you get it all.
Yeah, you get it all.
I want to talk with you about giants next hour, Stephen, but let's wrap up this hour with a few more thoughts about these little creatures. Why is it, though, that Hollywood, I'm not sure it was intentional, maybe it was, but I don't think it was, where they have portrayed these little creatures as fun-loving?
Well, I think it goes along with the seduction of evil, okay? And a good example of that is when you see the portrayal of even in the cartoons, you're always trying to see the Smurfs, okay? And little kids, look at, it should not be lost on anyone that when we're talking about something that so involves children, that cartoons would be geared to the children,
right,
in the same way that the fairy tales were. And I believe it's basically to seduce them and ultimately to lead them astray. And I see people now, let's just say Shrek, you know, on the other end of the spectrum too. He's an ogre. An ogre was a giant who ate people, a cannibalizing giant. So I think to answer your question, I hope I'm answering it, is because of the seduction of it and the seductive nature of it. And I want to say this, that again, the people that have responded to me, George, I always like it when readers respond. They are just saying, wow, I never knew that. I mean, again, in the book, I'm dealing with demons, dragons, and it's fascinating, wasn't it, that a science magazine, Science, which is a peer-reviewed journal, talked about dragons returning to Earth. Of course, mm-hmm. It was on April Fool's, but you can't separate even the things of dragons. You know, obviously, you look at the history of China, and you can get a feel for dragons. Japan, the same thing. And then, you know, when I'm dealing with dwarves, too, I'm not talking about little people. I'm talking about, you know, 6 to 12-inch entities. I think it will be amazing to people to find out that Pedro the Mountain Mummy, which was, I actually knew the guy that owned that at one time in Casper, Wyoming, how that disappeared.
I think I'd freak out, Stephen, if I saw a little person like that. Let's come back, talk a little bit more about that, then get into giants on Coast to Coast AM.